In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Defying the laws of the universe. Traveling across the globe. Giving up life and liberty. Finding the real people. Finding the truth. This team will stop at nothing to tell your story. Decades in the making. Finding the people behind the ads. Ad Phantom has arrived.
A little over the top?
Yeah, just a little.
Whatever, just roll with it.
All right, here we go.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ryan.
And I'm John.
And welcome to the Ad Phantom Show, the program where we strive to find the real people facing real issues and tell their stories. John, let me ask you, other than bacon, what is your favorite type of meat?
Probably beef. Or, I mean, really any meat wrapped in bacon's good.
Especially beef wrapped in bacon.
Or shrimp wrapped in scallop. Yeah. But particularly beef.
Yeah, beef is definitely mine as well. In fact, a lot of our fans see beef as their favorite type too. However, as a society, we often forget the process before we buy that delicious New York strip or savory flank steak at the market. Uh-huh. This week, ladies and gentlemen, John and I set out to find the gruesome details from the beef cattle and dairy farmers. We interviewed Jeff and Wayne, both running major cattle operations in the Midwest, and between the two of them, they have over 100 years of farming experience. We found the interview to be so intriguing that we easily could have talked with them for hours.
Hours.
We were surprised by many of their answers, and I'm sure they'll surprise you too. But first, John, let's hear your bacon recipe.
Absolutely. So this is one of my favorite new recipes. This one was set in, and it's so simple, I just had to pair it with beef. So when you cook your steaks, don't forget to eat a bacon-wrapped baked potato.
Ooh.
Pretty simple. Chop that bad boy in half. Throw some red onions in there. Salt and pepper. Wrap it in 2 to 3 pieces of bacon and bake it about...
Or 4 or 5, whatever you're...
Yeah, 4. Just wrap it up. You're going to throw it at about, it's a pretty low oven, 325 for about an hour and a half, because you want to be able to cook both the bacon and the meat, or the potato, make it tender.
That'll pair great with any grilled steak, broiled, right? Anything. That would be wonderful.
Super yummy.
So John's recipe, along with the others, they should be posted on the website. Every once in a while, they do get delayed a little bit, but you can check back often and they should be.
Sometimes out. I forget how to type. It's true. How was your week, Ryan?
It was really busy. Nothing really that interesting, though, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. Well, to make you feel better, speaking of all the cow pastures and whatnot, the local fields around here.
What? Speaking of cow pastures, John, okay. All right, I'm not even going to touch that one. So what is it about your fields that aren't cow pastures?
Well, all the farms have pumpkins in them now. They're all selling their pumpkin wares, you know.
At least out there out east. You know what all the farms have here?
I don't know. Cactuses?
Nothing. Yeah.
Oh,
sad. A lot of cacti. And...
Well, see, we get watermelons, and then we get pumpkins, because we in the South, and that's how we do it.
I miss that. I definitely miss that. Anyway. I miss the Halloween. Halloween is my favorite holiday. I know it's your favorite holiday too, John.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are working on getting some sweepstakes and prizes for Thanksgiving. For Thanksgiving, that is not our favorite holiday.
Yeah.
For Halloween, that is our favorite holiday because we both love it. So definitely visit the site because we're going to have some stuff coming.
And I do have to say, I had to go to the hardware store this week because I had to get a new drill bit so that I can make these fabulous little tea lights. You take those little baby pumpkins and you take, one of those 1.5-inch drill bits and you drill a little hole in it.
I think
and
you've
then
got
you
issues.
A,
and the last thing that I want anything to happen, John,
pumpkin?
Is for you to have a drill in your hand or any other power tool.
It's
that just
adorable.
Scares me. There's so what are you doing for Halloween?
Well, I'm not sure how well a 2-year-old sits down to put latex makeup on her face, but I kind of want to dress my kid up like a terrible, terrifying zombie. Because so
Do
many
it.
Kids are just so adorable that I think...
You gotta learn at an early age to,
right?
You know,
if,
to work
if you
with
could,
latex.
If you could really make your child look terrifying, because she'll yell brains, and I've taught her how to say things in her death metal voice, so it works.
Well, this
Black
poor child.
Like my heart. That was. She said that to my sister the other day. It made me smile.
This poor child.
Well,
she knows she's never going to get married, John.
She's going to grow up awesome.
That poor, poor child. Well, ladies and gentlemen, before we waste any more of your time, we're going to take a short break with a commercial, tell you about our feed updates, and then we'll be back with Jeff and Wayne about the farming industry.
See you
we'll
then.
Be right back after this. We want to take a moment to thank all of you out there who subscribe to our show.
Yeah, we can't thank you enough.
As you know, you can subscribe to our show via many different ways, such as iTunes, RSS podcatchers, and even by simply listening on our website.
I prefer iTunes.
And I like Beyond Pod for my Android phone. But here's the thing, our listener statistics system had a problem.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, and so our feed is going to be changing so that we can more effectively distribute our show.
So how is this going to affect our listeners?
Well, if you currently subscribe to our show via an RSS feed reader, the feed is going to change. You can access this new feed at our website, and it is www.adphantom.com/feed/podcast. Again, that is www.adphantom.com/feed/podcast. We will be finalizing this change over the next 2 weeks, but you can make the switch now.
So what's the easiest way for me to change this?
There are a number of different ways, actually. Just go to our website, adphantom.com, and you can click on the subscribe icon on the interactive toolbar at the bottom of the page. This will give you the option to subscribe to the podcast feed, among others. You can also click on the latest episode on the carousel. There's a link on that page to subscribe to our new feed entitled RSS.
So what about in iTunes?
iTunes is a little trickier and requires a redirect that we may or may not have full access to. The problem with the current feed may prevent us from making an easy switch, so you may have to subscribe to new feed altogether.
That doesn't sound very fun, but it's pretty simple though, right?
It is, but we will keep everyone updated so no one misses out on our show.
That's super important. We definitely don't want you guys to miss out. We also just want to remind everyone that you can check out and keep up to date with what's going on here at adphantom.com by becoming a fan of the show on Facebook. And like some sites, don't worry, we don't send out dozens of useless posts all day long.
That's true. We do encourage you all to participate by sharing your show ideas, bacon recipes, product reviews, and more, all via adphantom.com.
Ad Phantom, finding the people behind the ads.
Welcome back, everyone. Today we're talking about one of my favorite topics, and that topic is beef. Ryan, who do we have on the show with us today?
Wayne is from South Dakota and is now 59 years old, but started farming at 6 and has been doing it all his life. Wayne's farm is mostly beef cattle, but also raises dairy cows on about 5,500 acres that he runs along with his three brothers. Jeff, who is 51, has also been farming all his life and started driving a tractor at the age of 4. Once considering going full organic, Jeff's cows are dairy only that he raises in Minnesota. This topic is sometimes a gruesome one that people don't want to talk about, and can be the source of much controversy. If you don't live by a farm or ranch, then you may not be familiar with the labor-intensive, sometimes unpleasant responsibilities and smells that go along with being able to provide your local market with a constant supply of beef and milk. In fact, because so many don't know, many horror stories arise about the issue. It is common knowledge that farm work comes with long, labor-intensive hours. However, I don't think people really understand how much work really goes into raising cattle. In fact, scheduling this interview was even difficult because of your busy schedules. Can you start by giving us a brief outline of how your days begin and end? Jeff, we'll start with you.
Sure. I guess we rise, you know, I'm up at probably 5 o'clock and get out and go check the barn, and we're primarily dairy, so we're looking at the dairy barn. And I get the milking started about 5:30, and we're done with the milking in about an hour, give or take, depending on how things go. And then there's the feeding and the manure management and that kind of stuff. So we're busy until, probably 8:30, 9 o'clock, typically.
And how many cows come in and out during that process?
Yeah, we're working with about 60 milk cows at that point. We have a 40-stall barn, and we do need to double shift when we are milking the full 60, meaning we milk the group in the barn, and then we turn those out, bring the other ones in, and milk those. As far as young stock, that'd be the young animals that aren't milking yet. You know, those we take care of separately, and they're in various locations. In the summer, they're out in the pastures, and I manage them that way. And during the winter, they are in their loafing barns.
And how many times per day are they milked?
The milking on our farm, we just milk twice a day, 5 o'clock in the morning, and well, let's just go 6 in the morning, 6 in the evening. We work until probably 7 to 9 o'clock typically.
Is that pretty common to do it twice a day?
Yeah, it is. It's a standard. There are a number of farmers that are now going to three-time-a-day milking. That's been going on for years. And then there's also milking on demand in the larger dairies with the robotic milking that's coming on board now.
Gotcha. So, Wayne, how about your daily schedule? How does that start and end?
Well, my day starts about 6 in the morning. I go out, and I usually go to one pasture or the other, check the beef cattle in that pasture. Then I come home, and I have a bite to eat, and I go down usually by 9 o'clock. We go down. We meet at the milk barn, and we milk like 40 cows. It takes about an hour and a half to milk up, another half hour to an hour to feed the calves and the cows and clean stuff up. Then we have a sort of a what we call a meeting. We decide what everybody's going to do that day, and then we disperse to whatever the job we've been assigned, I guess. And then again that night, we meet at like 9 o'clock to milk. We milk about 9 at night.
So are you also milking just twice a day for the cattle, yeah, for the cattle that you are milking? Okay.
What are some of the common challenges and risks that you guys face based on what particular season of the year it is? Wayne, can you start?
Our biggest issue here is probably the weather. The last few years has been the weather. We've had tremendous amounts of rain. We've had awful wet, muddy conditions.
Right.
As far as safety factors, you can be kicked by a milk cow at any time.
Have you been kicked many times? Anything serious?
Yes, I've been kicked many times, yes. I couldn't tell you how many times.
And some think the marriage is rough.
Well, milk cows is like being married to two wives.
Maybe that's why I'm a cook and not a farmer. I get to play with dead animals and fire and knives. It's a nice distraction. Jeff, can you answer the same question?
Wayne, you know, touched on the weather. The weather is always a factor in what we do, and I think if you've done it as long as Wayne and I have, you've seen just about everything, or at least you think you have until you've seen the thing that you haven't. But you just get used to it. I'm right there with Wayne. The last number of years has been really a dinger with moisture. This year, I don't know if you've got hay, Wayne. I've got, you know, a bunch of alfalfa I try to make, and I try to make dry hay. And that was a real trick this year. Yeah, what are you laughing at, man? it was unbelievable. It had a circus atmosphere this year, but you live through it. You know, it's part of the challenge and the fun of being a dairyman, I think.
All right. So in my travels throughout the U.S., I've had the opportunity to meet with all types of farmers. One of the common attitudes that I run into, no matter what part of the country I'm in, is a strong sense of patriotism. But there's a general distrust and, in many times, downright anger towards the government for regulation. Many pro-regulation groups unjustly characterize farmers as gun-toting hillbillies, which, of course, is an unfounded stereotype. But the fact of the matter is, at any given time, there are a dozen or more regulations up that directly affect your way of life. I'd like to talk a little bit about those regulations and how you guys feel about them. So the first one is I'd like to talk about H.R. 965, which is the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act of 2011. This law would stop veterinarians and producers from preventing disease in livestock, which would ultimately harm animal welfare, animal health, food safety, and food security. Prevention of disease is a cornerstone in both human and animal medicine. Taking away this tool undermines preventative medicine, and healthy animals are the foundation of a safe food supply. How do you, Wayne, feel about this type of regulation, as in the antibiotics for livestock?
Well, I think there's a definite place for antibiotics in livestock, and I think that's going to hurt the industry terribly if they take them out.
How so?
Nobody in the livestock industry overtreats a critter. You know, it's not feasible to use medicine forever on one. If they do, they feed an antibiotic in the feed, but that's a real low-grade antibiotic.
Jeff, how do you feel about antibiotics in the livestock?
Well, I've really studied this. I was considering doing the organic farming for quite a little while, and I chose not to. And I'm right there with Wayne. It's not profitable to feed antibiotics on a continuous basis, and you run into the exact same things with the critters as you would with a human. And what I'm thinking of is If you're going to use antibiotics to excess, it will not be very long where the antibiotics will no longer work. The issue of overusing antibiotics, you know, we'd have to be complete morons as livestock producers to overuse antibiotics because they will no longer work. And so I treat only when necessary. You know, I'll wait. I'll take a look. I'll treat each animal individually. If we're going to have some a rainy spell at this time of the year and it's cold outside, the animals are at risk. You know, we'll run an antibiotic for a couple weeks or whatever, but you get off of it as soon as possible because it's just not feasible. It's not profitable to run it full time, and it just doesn't work. It takes your tools away by creating this sensitivity to antibiotics, and they no longer work.
Just real quick, Wayne, what are the risks of not using antibiotics?
A fairly often visit from the rendering service. that's about all I can tell you. And you low birth weights, your cattle are stunted, you know, they just, you know, you get something that gets pneumonia and you don't treat it, and it will never get close to its potential.
Jeff?
The exact same way. That's why I did not go organic. Organic, you do not have those options, and you will lose your cattle or you will have unthrifty cattle. Either way, you'll not be in the business very long. And again, we're not talking about perpetual use. It's, you know, Wayne, I'm sure, watches his cattle like a hawk. He said he's up at 5 o'clock going looking at his cattle, but we're not there admiring, you know, how pretty they look. you know, we're assessing what is going on out there. And by golly, if you see an animal that's ill, you had better get on it, or you're going to have 10 that are ill, or 20, or 100, and you better treat it early, and you better treat it often until it's done, and then get it off antibiotics, get it back into the, you know, into the herd, and get it back going, or you will not be in business long.
So, you know, a lot of animal rights activists will tout the, like you said, that whole free range organic beef farming kind of things like that, if they support, you know, eating animals at all. So with that said, a lot of times they ask, why is it so necessary to give these animals so many antibiotics, such as in their feed, even when they're not ill? You know, like you said, it would build up the immunity towards antibiotics. So why is it necessary to put so many antibiotics in their feed? Wayne, how about yourself, sir? You said you use antibiotics in your feed.
Yes, we do. But as Jeff said, we feed it in a cycle. Like when we wean our calves, our beef calves in the fall, we have them on feed for about a week, and then we usually put a antibiotic in the feed. It's a 5-day treatment. Mm-hmm. You treat them for 5 days, and then you're done. And hopefully that 1 5-day treatment gets them over the stress. And it depends on the weather. If the weather's really nice, it may not be necessary.
Well, that does make sense.
That's basically the only antibiotic we use. There's some antibiotics that have a growth stimulant in their makeup, and so they feed them, like in beef cattle, a lot of guys feed it constantly to make them gain faster.
Jeff, do you use any growth hormones in your feed?
None.
Okay. How do you feel about growth hormones?
I know that there are those who use that. I, for myself, I do not. I just don't feel that it's necessary. If you're pushing hard, and I guess that's where the economics can come in, and you talk about risk, and you talk about the things that we are challenged with, there are money cycles in this business. You know, we have to show a profit or we're not going to be there. And so when money gets tight, you're going to look at every avenue to be able to survive. And some gentlemen, some owners, livestock owners, will choose to use, you know, antibiotics in a little different way than maybe Wayne or I do.
So as a whole, Wayne, this question, you can answer it first, and then Jeff. How do you feel all these medicines and hormones and chemicals affect the quality of the meat or the milk in the animal?
It depends on how long it's fed and how long they're off in it before they are slaughtered. You know, there's a withdrawal on almost all that stuff, at least right. 30 days. You know, they have to be off in it for at least 30 days before they can be slaughtered.
So there's no hormones and chemicals and antibiotics 30 days before slaughter, is that correct?
That's basically what it is.
Is that a common practice or is it a regulation?
It's a regulation. If gotcha. They find antibiotics in your critters when they are slaughtered, I couldn't tell you what the penalty may be, but I'm sure you're going to hear from somebody. Once you get spotted, then they're going to watch you like you won't believe.
Jeff, how about yourself?
There's two parts to that, the way I want to look at it. And number one, having the antibiotics available to you, and if you're using them properly, I'm convinced 100% that you're going to have healthier food. You're going to have healthier animals, healthier meat. And so you're avoiding disease. You're avoiding those types of things. So from that aspect, it's better. Now, from a residue side of things, if you would have a residue, that's not good, because now we're talking about antibiotic sensitivities in human beings and all of that. You know, so that's a two-edged sword. But just like Wayne said, we are heavily regulated, and I'm sure Wayne's family eats the meat he produces as well, as do I. And I, you know, we drink the milk. We like to be healthy. We're not going to overuse antibiotics. We are going to pull them out. Whatever the label says, I will actually add on extra withholding time from the time that last time they're treated to the time that they're sold or butchered. The benefits are huge, I think, because we don't have persistent diseased animals up for slaughter. I just want to touch on the persistent disease thing. I did ship an animal that I didn't catch. It looked healthy to me. It was rejected. I didn't get paid for that animal. So there are a lot of things in place right now that will prevent diseased animals or suspicious looking animals at point of slaughter. They will not take them. It turned out this one did have a lung issue and they did not take it.
I want to go back to how the media likes to paint this gory, bloody picture of especially cattle farmers, and that all of them are these mad, inhumane, slaughter, kill happy individuals, and that all of these farms are horrible places that mistreat their animals. Between the two of you, you've got over 100 years of farming experience. Have you ever had the opportunity to witness or see any of these farms that, you know, animal rights groups like to put on commercials?
I don't. In our area, I just don't see it. And again, once you cross that line to treating your animals poorly, whether it's poor conditions, poor feeding practices, poor handling practices, it just doesn't work. From a financial standpoint, every time that you get your cattle into maybe a heightened adrenaline state, you can't work with them. They will kick you when they're scared. That's their defense mechanism. I don't like getting kicked. It's not much fun. I don't like scared animals. That isn't much fun. When you're working with the animals, you know when they're scared. You know when they're content. I just do not see it. Now, it's possible, I'm sure. And the larger the operation, there's a tendency to think that it may be more prevalent there, but I don't know that that's the case. The large dairies that I've toured, you know, they dwarf me in size and scale, and man, I tell you, those animals are content. They're, you know, little different conditions. So in answer to that question, no, I just have not seen it.
How about you, Wayne?
No, I've never seen it. I read about it in the paper, but I've never seen these places. Cattle been mistreated or haven't been fed, things like that. I haven't seen it. I'm sure it happens somewhere all the time, but it can't happen in my business because I wouldn't be in business.
Less than 50 miles from where I live in Arizona, which, as you know, is a constant 100-plus degrees for about 4 months of the year, there is a large cattle farm, and it is just stockyards as far as the eye can see, with a little bit of an overhang so that there's some shade over the cattle. They're not roaming. They're just lined up, basically living in their own crap the entire time. Can you explain to me how that's possible, how it's justified, and if this is technically one of those horror stories, or is it fairly common in different areas of the United States? Wayne, we'll start with you.
Well, I'd say that's a very common. That's a large commercial cattle feeding operation. They are feeding them cattle up for slaughter. And yeah, they're in a fairly small pens of them. They're not a large pen. They have shade. They probably have a sprinkler system to cool these animals down. Yeah, it happens all over.
How do you feel about those types of operations?
I guess they're a necessary evil.
Okay.
That type of cattle feeding business probably is what most of the anti-cattle people look at when they start yelling about mistreatment of animals. And I don't really know if it's mistreatment, but some people think it is.
Jeff, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I've not seen too many of those. I know they exist. I know that they're part of our way of life, I guess. I guess I'll answer it this way. You know, I just don't raise them that way. I don't know that I could deal with that personally.
it just goes to show that it can't be too common, because you guys have been farming for, you know, between the two of you, over a century of experience, and you don't have a ton of contact with it. Well, I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, we have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in just a moment. Hello, everyone. This is Ryan, and I'm stepping in for Cody this week for the product reviews.
And I'm John, and I'm stepping in for Ryan this week for the product reviews.
We're such a great team, John.
That's right.
So we got a couple of great products here. Well, we got a couple of products. I don't know if I'd call them both great, but the first one here.
This is why I usually am in the bathroom, using the bathroom during this part of the show, right?
Because you're full of. So
that's right.
The first one actually got some decent reviews, but their customer service was pretty crappy. We're referring to Ted's Woodworking Plans and Projects. And basically this, which is fairly popular, there's a lot of reviews out there about it. This is a product where you buy an ebook and you get thousands of plans. In fact, 16,000 plans and projects, according to the site.
So how much is it?
According to them, with all the bonuses and stuff you get, the total price would be $197, which is kind of high. Yeah. But it says today it's $67. That today really just means all the time.
Yeah,
pretty much. It's a little, I don't know, I get kind of this weird vibe for it. But again, you're looking for plans here. You're not looking for a long-term relationship with those people. Yeah. So it's pretty good.
Are the blueprints good?
The examples that they give are great. They're like gazebos and outdoor, like composter sheds, and you know, some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so they're pretty intense. I mean,
from the examples that I've seen and the other bits that they've got, they're highly detailed, and so you want to make sure that, you know, you're well prepared and have a lot of tools. Here's the thing: their customer service was pretty crappy, and this is the part that we ended up dropping it to only one star, because initially we wanted to interview these people, so we sent out an email. They didn't respond to us until like a month later, and it was a lame response. We responded immediately to them, and then we waited another month. We're still waiting for our next response. So all in all, it got 4 stars because the product – or 3.8 stars actually. The product looked pretty good. It's got a great presentation. It really lost on the customer service there.
That's too bad.
So if you're looking for more, check it out on our website. Next product is one that is very useful for both you and I, John, because we both wear glasses. Using contacts. And I
was hoping it's going to be one of those like grabby things where you can like not to get out of your recliner to pick up the remote.
What are you trying to say? You calling me lazy?
No, I'm just saying that'd be helpful. That maybe a little rascal or something.
This is somewhat helpful because it'll let you see what you're grabbing for if you have the grabby thing.
There you go.
Here's the thing. I hate glasses. I don't use them very often, but the ones that I have are underpowered because I got them a long time ago. So I need to get some new ones, and I've been thinking about getting them from these guys. Here's the thing. Their site looks awesome. Their deals look great. Their customer service is top-notch. They've got all these lowest price guarantees, all this stuff, the wide range of glasses. If you are looking for any type of glasses, you go there and you can easily find what you're looking for. I mean, it's just straightforward. Here are the glasses. It is a little confusing if you're just trying to shop around and you don't know what your style is. So if you're looking for glasses that are stylish, you may want to go to your shop to see how they look like on your face first before you head to this place. But if you know exactly what you want to get, or like a buying
site,
it is Glasses USA. And right now you can get up to 70% off of prescription glasses, and you can right now they've got some deals where you can get 20% off plus free shipping. Lots of good stuff. The only reason they lost 1 star out of value was because there was nothing on their site that made me feel like I had to buy from them. There's a lot of different sites out there that will sell glasses and contact lenses and stuff, and they all kind of have the standard deals. So there's nothing that was eye-popping, no pun intended, for me to just be like, oh, I got to buy them from Glasses USA. But they are constantly having different deals and stuff. They're a pretty big company. So, you know, you got some good backup there as far as customer service and value.
Awesome.
All right. Well, those are the two products I wanted to share with you all this afternoon. For more product reviews and our daily reviews and special deals through our premier partners, visit adphantom.com. John and I are going to head right back to our interview. We'll be right back after this quick soundbite. We'll be right back. We'll be right back, folks.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with two beef farmers or cattle farmers, ranchers, and dairy owners, Wayne and Jeff. We're going to jump back into questions. To lighten the mood a little bit, let's talk about slaughterhouses. That'll pique people's interest. You know, this is probably one of the more controversial areas. I mean, at the end of the day, once the cow no longer produces dairy, that animal does become food. A lot of the people that are animal rights activists, most of them probably don't eat meat. But those that do eat meat are concerned about these big operations. We've touched on that and kind of the humane treatment of animals. But I'm going to get on a soapbox here. First things first, human rights can only be for humans. That's why they're called human rights. It's, animals should have rights. You should treat them well. But at the end of the day, you're raising this animal to eat it. It will become food. Don't get emotionally
attached. And for people who are so anti-meat, they sure do try really hard to make non-meat products taste like meat. Have you noticed that?
Exactly. They spend a lot of time making food taste like meat. If you ever go to Whole Foods, you can see that. Not that I have anything against that. I have a lot of whole food, vegetarian, vegan friends, and I love them to death. We just don't talk about certain things. Coming from a cooking background, I'd like to know a little bit about the slaughtering process. We'll start with you, Jeff. Do you slaughter on site or do you send it away to be processed?
The cattle that are done, you know, you'd mentioned the process with the dairy, the cull dairy cows, the cull cows, that term is just, you know, those are the ones that you ship to slaughter. That is done off site. For our own use and consumption, we certainly do slaughter on site. When it comes to slaughtering the animals that we consume as a family, the common sense part of it, the morality part of it says, you know, kill them quickly, get the suffering out, and get on with it. That's the whole point of it. As far as my attitude toward the slaughtering process, it's not my favorite part of the deal. It's very humbling. It evokes a tremendous amount of respect for nature and for God and those types of things at that point of process. For me, it's not depressing, but it is very humbling because of the nature of the way it is. For me, it's a very reflective time.
Right. Wayne, how about yourself, sir?
Oh, I pretty much have to agree with Jeff. Only for our family, we don't slaughter on site. We have it done by a locker plant type operation that processes livestock for themselves usually and for customers like us. We done it a lot years ago. Mm-hmm. And I guess the reason we quit was the old timers got too old.
Right. I personally feel like there's a disconnect with America, the kind of the field to plate transition. Like they just don't see it. There's not enough of, you know, this is an animal and then that animal is what we have for dinner. I have a child, a daughter, and as a cook, I want to help her understand, you know, we have a little garden and I'm like, these are carrots and we're going to eat them and they're going to be yummy. But doing that with like a chicken or, you know, a deer or something like that, it's a little bit more tricky. Jeff, how about yourself? Do you have any insight?
Yeah, I've got it was a mildly humorous story. We switched our kids to a different school for better opportunities, educational opportunities and things like this. The youngest two, the one was a senior last year and the other one was a freshman. We had the graduation party and we had these young people come out from a town of probably 50,000. That's only, you know, 25 miles from us. And they toured the dairy barn and it was all fun and games until one of them happened to step in the gutter, which is what collects the manure, and it was like all hell broke loose, excuse me, but they left their shoe behind. I mean, it was eye opening, you know, in their mind, it felt a little like a zoo, I suppose. But the reality is we deal with the other end as well. And so the disconnect, there is a huge disconnect. And our reality, the reality that Wayne and I deal with on a daily basis, people are completely unaware of nature's reality right now. And it is a little frightening. How we overcome it is just by what we said. You know, when we had the graduation party, yes, you're welcome to go in the dairy barn. How you come out of there and what your feelings are, well, that's going to be your experience. But I believe that we probably should be doing a better job of doing education, I think.
Do you think it's getting worse in America, the disconnect?
Let's not use the word worse, but it is getting more pronounced. The lack of knowledge, even on the vegetable side and the meat side, the amount of labor, the amount of land it takes to feed, the amount of cattle it takes to, you know, to have burgers at a fast food joint. Yeah, it is definitely getting more pronounced. And we really, as a nation, as cattle growers, we really do need to address that, I think.
Jeff, what do you think we can do to improve that as a society?
Well, I'm thinking about bringing a load of cattle and just letting them out and run around the downtown St. Cloud. I don't know.
I think that could be
watch.
Absolutely. You can bring in your own load of cattle, if you like. We'll see what happens. It would be nice if we could make it, rather than a trip, a field trip to the farm, which goes on and it happens, it would be nice if we could make it more frequent than once every, you know, kid's lifetime to be out on a dairy or be out on, you know, aware of cattle. As harsh it is, as it is, as violent as it is, I believe it would be very good for people to understand from a young age where meat comes from. The longer you wait, the more violent it seems and the more disconnected it is. I think young children understand. And that is part of who we are. We eat food, and animals are food.
No, I definitely agree with that. Wayne, do you feel the disconnect as well?
Oh, yeah. I see it in my own relatives. They don't get the idea. The younger kids, you know, you'll say, well, when they come to visit, you'll take them out and show them a cow. Well, there's where your hamburger comes from. And they look at me, no, we get that at McDonald's. They have no idea that hamburger came from out here on the prairie. There's a terrible disconnect, and it's gotten tremendously worse because there's getting to be less and less of us, and therefore there isn't the contact that people used to have.
How do you feel we can do as a society to correct this issue?
Well, I think if it would work, every farmer should have at least one tour a year on his farm. For the people to come out and see what goes on.
Good point.
There's some real regulation, right? There's some regulation for us for something being positive.
Because
the only thing is, you have to remember there's a liability issue in there.
Right.
Somebody was to get hurt, boy, you could be in big trouble.
Yeah, all you need is for some really crazy parent to step in a pile of and you're screwed.
but still, back to beef.
So back to beef. We talked about this a little bit earlier about feed and how different feeds affect the quality of the meat or the milk. Jeff, do you see, is there any difference in the milk quality based on
the absolutely. The timing of the cutting of the alfalfa is so critical. The age of the alfalfa. And this is where you're fighting weatherman. You know, about the time you're supposed to harvest, you get rain for 3 weeks and the quality goes down because it's getting too old. Or you cut it and it lays out in the field till kingdom come, and then it doesn't look like feed anymore. I'm not sure what it looks like. What do you think it looks like, Wayne?
It makes manure. That's what I say it does. There isn't much food value left.
I'll capitalize on what you just said, Wayne. Normally you wait for the manure after the cow eats it.
Yeah.
If it's out in the field too long, it's manure out there.
That's right.
People don't realize how much timing and precision is required in that as well. Wayne, what kind of feeds do you use, and do you grow them on your property?
Outside of minerals and supplements, we feed everything is grown here that we feed. We feed alfalfa hay, like Jeff, and we feed grass hay. We also chop the silage and feed silage. We background our calves, which is we wean them, feed them for about 3 to 4 months, feed them up to that 700 pounds, and then we market them then. And our beef or our dairy cattle, we save all the heifers and we feed out the steers. Yeah, all the feed that's fed here is raised here.
Do you also notice a large difference in quality based on the feed?
Oh, yeah. It's a never-ending process to try and get it right. But I will say, when you hit a good quality alfalfa hay, you can see a 10% increase in milk production in 2-3 days.
I have a quick question about skim milk. I know that titanium dioxide is a common ingredient. Is it true that you actually have to add titanium dioxide to skim milk to make it white? And that's why they used to call it blue milk, because it was actually a pale blue color.
I guess I'm gonna answer that this way. When I was a kid, I drank gallons and gallons of skim milk, and it all looked white to me.
Okay, fair enough.
Added nothing to it. We drank skim milk.
What? But was it? Was it a kind of a Carolina blue color?
Well, I'm colorblind, but I thought it was white.
Okay. No, I don't think it changed. I don't know that there's any validity. You know, from my perspective, what you're talking about, the titanium thing, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, fair enough. It was something I'd heard. I just thought I'd ask you to clear it up. I'm glad that skim milk has always been white. That blue milk is just a wives tale. Urban myth, I guess.
Well, Jeff, when I talked to you earlier in scheduling the interview, you had talked about farming and its impact on family values. Would you share some of your thoughts with us?
Well, sure. I appreciate that question. The reason that we farmed, my wife and I chose farming, or it chose us, or whatever happened, is primarily because of the family aspect of it. We raised four kids. You know, the oldest one is 25. We got one 23, 18, and 15 right now. The reason we chose it is because we couldn't figure out how to raise kids without the farm. I know it's done every day, but for us, we just could not do it. And it's a little different than when I was raised, and I'm sure maybe with Wayne, but when I was raised, you worked the farm period, you know, that was the extent of what you did. You went to school, you came back home, you worked, and that was the extent of it. What we did was we involved the kids in everything that we did out in the field, in the dairy barn, and to this day, when they come home and they have a chance, they'll work with it. I guess the key word there was had a chance. They have been trained watching us work, working themselves, seeing what it takes to survive and those kinds of things. And then when with the family, they had their opportunities to develop whatever they wanted. They could get out of chores by studying, but it better show up as grades. You know, and what I would say is in our situation, they learned how to work. They learned what work looks like. They learned how long and hard work is and what the rewards can be. But they were able to instill that at a very young age into their passions, their gifts, their dreams, their desires. And I don't know if there's a better way to show those types of things, to just see somebody working. I think that's something that's really lacking in young people these days. It's hard for them to see and understand what work is.
Wayne, how do you feel about family values and how it ties into farming?
It's the greatest life on earth, but it's the most hectic, I think, because there's no such thing as an actual vacation on a dairy farm. But kids learn to work. That's how I learned to work. A story for me would be when I was in high school, and, you know, my friends in school would say, gee, let's go here. Gee, let's go here on Saturday. And I'd say, no, I got work to do on Saturday. I work on the farm at home, and I got stuff to do at home. They really never could understand that, I don't think. But once you've lived it, it's the greatest life on earth, I think. And I was married later in life. My two stepkids were grown and gone, and I think they missed out. They seem to be doing all right anyway, so I can't complain. It's a great way to raise a family. You can work together with your kids. There's no better way, I don't think.
I think you guys make really valid points. Some of the people with the strongest work ethic that I've ever had a chance to associate with have had a farming background in some form or another. And even on a smaller scale, you know, making your kids do chores and making a garden. Wayne, why do you think less and less people are getting into farming these days?
Money-wise, it's a large capital investment. Unless you can find somebody that you can start out with, and maybe take the operation over from him, buy him out, whatever, at a halfway decent fair price. It's hard to get into farming anymore. It's really tough. I know I wouldn't be farming right now if it hadn't been for my dad. When he was farming, I went to school. I come home from school. I started farming with him. I rented some land. I used his machinery. I worked his land for him. I didn't work my land, and that's how I got started. My brothers, as they got out, we slowly bought land. We tripled the size of the operation.
What did you go to school for, if you don't mind me asking?
I went to school for diesel mechanics at a technical school. I graduated in 1970. 72 it was, out of technical school. And I did all our mechanic work was done on the farm here until, probably 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then it's gotten to the point there's too much electronics, computer stuff, that you have to have in order to even work on this.
That's right. You have to plug them into your laptop just to see what's wrong with them. Jeff, same question. Why do you think less people are getting into farming?
Definitely the economics of it. It's a tough challenge. It's just like any entrepreneurial type thing, although the cost of the equipment, cost of land and all that, that's definitely a deal. The other side, though, I think that very few people have the guts to go 24/7. It's a very kind of an interesting quandary, and I don't think people like the physical labor of it, which is odd because we are having a diabetes epidemic and a weight problem, and we're looking down on physical labor as it's some sort of underclassed, option. Manual labor is not looked at as respectable as it once was, and I think people shy away from it for that reason. And yet, I can tell with Wayne, you learn to love it. You learn to, you respect your bodies and that kind of stuff. So I think along with what Wayne said, I would throw that in there as well.
Yeah, so basically, again, that goes back to work ethic. It's hard work, and people are scared of hard work, I think, these days. Before we close, I know we're running short on time, and we want to wrap up here. Right before we close, I do want to ask you guys a quick question. We'll start with you, Wayne, and then we'll go to Jeff. What is your favorite dish with beef that you eat on a regular basis?
Meatloaf.
Meatloaf. That's a classic. Do you do ketchup or gravy?
Both.
Both. Even better. That sounds like a delight. I might have to come up there. If I'm ever in town, I'll take it. You need to get your recipe. If you email that to me, we can put it on the website.
I'll have to talk to my cook about that.
Fair enough. Jeff, how about you, sir?
I love everything with beef, but I've got to say there's nothing better than a great hamburger.
Great
hamburger, and you there's the onions, you get a homemade bun, and you have ketchup on the side if you're so inclined, and throw a pickle or two in there, and a glass of milk, and heck, I'm good.
Well, there you have it. The perfect hamburger.
And the bigger the better, by the way. I only like to eat one hamburger, but I like to be able to request help lifting it.
Right? When I was going to school in Idaho, there was a local place that did a 1-pound hamburger, and it was a pound of meat after it was cooked. They didn't cook a pound of meat.
Yeah.
It was a pound of meat after it was cooked.
My kind of burger.
That's a good burger. Anyway, go ahead, Ryan.
All right. Well, Jeff and Wayne, we want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to tell your story. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time. John and I both felt that we could have talked to you guys for hours.
You're very welcome.
It was a blast. It was nice meeting you guys.
In closing, I have one quick request. And that request is that if you were to tell the general public that doesn't have much exposure to the farming industry in 20 seconds, 30 seconds tops, what would you tell them? And we'll start with you, Jeff.
I would say that you owe it to yourself to see where food comes from. You owe it to yourself to see how much labor goes into it. It will do you much good to see what all goes into it. And don't feel sorry for us knotheads that farm, by the way. It is the best way of life. It's killer. it'll wreck your body. It'll wreck your brain. And that's, just people that know me, now you know why I am in the shape that I'm in. All right?
Wayne, what would you tell the general public?
Just don't judge us too harshly on what they think goes on. One bad apple ruins the whole barrel. People don't realize that. And the only people they hear about are the bad apples.
Excellent messages from both of you. We obviously have a couple of good apples, and we really respect your way of life and the hard work that you do to make sure that there's food on the table for the rest of us. Thank you for joining us, and we will be right back after this short break with our musical guest.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Yes,
thank you.
As you know, Ad Phantom is audience-driven.
Yes. John and I have been diagnosed with a deficiency in cardio-creative juices and pygmy show ideas entertaining to the general public syndrome.
Right. But don't worry, we're totally medicated.
And the side effects are murder.
Okay. Yes, so we need your help.
We sure do. Do you have a great show idea? Maybe something you're interested in or struggle with on a daily basis? Maybe you've got some juicy stories or details about a crazy conspiracy that you can't share yourself for fear of imprisonment or deportation.
Wait, what?
It could happen.
Right. Well, what Ryan is trying to say is that we need your help to share your interests on the things that are important to you, so that we can tell your story here on the show. Of course, you don't have to give your name if you'd like to remain anonymous.
Whether that be a bacon recipe, a show idea, or musical talent, each week we feature musical artists in order to increase your fan base and expose your talent.
That's right. Small businesses, artists, big companies, crazy folks with crazy ideas, it's all free. We want to help you all grow your audiences. Visit adfandom.com and check them all out.
Ad Phantom, finding the people behind the ads. His solo recordings just 2 years ago, James Olin Odin is a singer-songwriter of Celtic music local to Raleigh, North Carolina. Having played in several Celtic bands over the years, he has developed a compelling rhythmic style that pulls you into the music, taking you to the views and vistas of Ireland and Scotland. Throughout a performance, James goes from drinking songs to heart-rending ballads to foot-stomping jigs and reels, giving audiences a full experience of what Celtic music can offer. Says James, "It's always been about what moves the heart. The songs I sing are compelling stories whose telling must be told over and over again. The stories range from dark acts that should not be forgotten to the silly revelries that we should never forsake. My hope is that as my heart is moved by the music, so too may yours be moved." James performs live all over North Carolina, from the Raleigh-Durham area to Furniture Capital High Point. To find out more about James, where you can see him live, and purchase his album via iTunes, visit adphantom.com. Special thanks to all our guests and all the staff here at Ad Phantom. We once again thank you for joining us and hope you enjoyed the show. Are you in a band or have a great show idea? We love feedback, so please visit our website, www.adphantom.com. Leave a comment, become our Facebook fan, follow us on Twitter, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Also, don't forget to look at our daily product deals. We'll now close with one of our favorite tracks from our musical guest.
Some flowers, they bloom in the springtime. Others bloom on into the summertime. But you, darling, are always in bloom, even in the wintertime. Darling, you're beautiful in the morning time. Honey, you sparkle in the moonshine. And all the flowers bloom in the day or night. Don't compare to you. The morning glories wake to kiss the dawn. The moon flowers bloom in the evening time. But you, darling, are always in bloom. You are always beautiful.
And Phantom, finding the people behind the ads.